Hello and a warm welcome to this Sweet Spot, your go-to golf tipping show, brought to you by the Racing Post. It's Jack Reeve and it's Steve Palmer to look back on the Genesis Invitational. Two tournaments to preview this week in the shape of the Kenya Open and the Mexico Open. Steve Palmer, deep breaths required. The PGA Tour is testing our patience at the moment.
It is, Jack. Yeah, just when you think you can't get any more frustrated, along comes another Sunday evening of PGA Tour torture. I think they should rename it the PGA Torture. Scotty Scheffler's putter the week before last. And then, yeah, that was frustrating. But yeah, the weekend performance of Patrick Cantlay at Riviera was even more frustrating. Yeah, I think Lady Luck has turned into a sadist at the moment, Jack. We just need the worm to turn.
We do. And at least we're getting it in the right positions, Steve. You know, we predicted a good week from Patrick Cantlay. And as I said last week with Scotty, if you would have said at one point he'd be five clear, you would have taken that. It wasn't to be. It was the round of probably the year on the PGA Tour from Hideki in round four. He was six back from Patrick Cantlay going into the final round. He ended up winning by three. It was one of those, if you look at the final leaderboard, you would have thought it was an absolute canter. It wasn't. It was a phenomenal round of golf from Hideki Matsuyama, Steve. And when he gets going, he's one of the best in the world.
Well, absolutely. And to address the Patrick Cantlay weekend that you mentioned, it turns out he was ill for the final round. Did you know that? The story broke yesterday. No, he woke up on Sunday morning, apparently, with a temperature of over 100 degrees. So that may explain why he was quite so bad on Sunday. You know, imperious for 36 holes, five shots clear, then got a bit defensive on the Saturday. You know, he played that round as if it was the final round, you know, playing for the center of greens, happy making pars. And it was a tactic, to be fair to him, that looked like it might work until the 17th hole. On the 17th hole on Saturday, if he'd found the fairway there, it's a pretty routine birdie, but it's a par five. But he sliced the drive, laid up, was short with his approach, failed to get up and down. So he made a bogey at 17, and suddenly that plan that he had backfired, and the lead was down to two, and that put enormous pressure on him on Sunday. I think with a four-shot lead, even though he was ill, he obviously dosed up on pills, didn't he? Because you couldn't tell he wasn't sweating or anything. He didn't look very happy, but he never looks very happy, does he? So I couldn't tell he was ill until I found out. But I think with a four-shot lead going into Sunday, even though he was ill, I think he would have defended that. But a two-shot lead, too much pressure. And then he made a par at that easy par five opening hole, and just the control of the tournament just disappeared in a flash. I'm sorry, I know you wanted me to talk about Hideki, but I just had to get my Cantlay grief out of the way first.
They say, don't they, in football, sort of 2-0 is the most dangerous scoreline to be ahead. And it kind of feels the same in golf. I was messaging you, and you should be really excited when your player hits the front and goes clear. But I think I've still got Thristo Lawrence in the back of my mind. I was so confident that he'd win that in the South African Open, and it didn't happen. And like you say, I think it's a completely different mentality. There is then something to hold on to. And as you say, he was so different on that Saturday. It was far from poor, but yeah. I think you almost rather being the hunting rather than the hunted, don't you, in that situation?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, and Hideki Matsuyama, I mean, yeah, let's find some joy in that, because it is a joy to watch Hideki Matsuyama in full flow. I remember being on him in the Bridgestone Invitational. Remember that in 2017 at Firestone? And he closed with a 61 there. It was one of the best rounds I've ever seen. It was near perfect golf. He won by five shots. And, you know, when he's in the groove, he can produce near perfect golf. And, you know, 62 at Riviera is the best closing round in history to win that. It's one of the best PGA Tour rounds I've ever seen. It was magnificent. It's bogey free. And, yeah, I suppose what more did we expect from a former world number one amateur? I mean, he's shown his pedigree, and all credit to
him. I'm not biting, Steve. He's a difficult player to be on, though, Hideki, isn't it? For those that found the winner last week, if you're watching him based solely on facial expressions, you just assume he's shooting sort of 75 every round. There was that patch, wasn't he, where he hit it to 6 inches, then 3 inches, and you would have thought he'd missed the green. He has such high standards.
Well, the second of those shots, he clearly not aiming that far right, was he? I mean, he he looked disillusioned because I think he thought it was going to find the bunker. So yeah, I suppose he got away with one there, but yeah, such a cozy victory in the end. But yeah, his iron play is amazing. He chipped. He's an underrated chipper.
Yeah,
is his decking match arm. He's brilliant around the greens. Yeah, when he putts well, which is not very often, you know, that's always the traditional weakness. Yeah, he can be devastating. So yeah, Hideki Matsuyama's on our Masters shortlist now, isn't he?
Absolutely. What were you more disappointed with, Steve? Patrick Cantlay or Tiger Woods pulling out early? As the biggest Tiger Woods fan on planet Earth.
Oh, definitely Patrick Cantlay. I mean, Patrick Cantlay was a devastating blow. Tiger Woods played well enough to defeat Justin Thomas in round one, Justin Thomas looked like the greatest three ball bet of all time. Tiger Woods and Gary Woodland managed to defeat him in round one. It's a shame what's happened to Tiger. The end is nigh, isn't it? I mean, it feels like the end is nigh.
I've said it before, Steve, you know, there's always so much excitement surrounding Tiger when he plays again. I really don't get any joy from watching him anymore. He doesn't swing it the same. It's really, I always find it difficult watching him walk. Like it just looks painful.
Yeah.
And I love watching him talk about the game and, you know, watching old reels, but I don't know about you. There's nothing in it for me watching him play golf nowadays.
You don't want the memories tarnished, do you?
No.
Jack? I know what you're saying, because, you know, Tiger Woods, you know, to whisper it, he did a shank last week, didn't he? Did you see the shank? Yeah, it's the worst shot I've ever seen Tiger Woods hit. He blamed it on a back spasm or something, which is a lovely excuse to have. But, you know, he played well on the previous hole and then boom, he's hit an absolute shocker there. So if Tiger Woods is going to start shanking, I just wish he'd retire. I think I don't want to watch Tiger Woods shanking. Go out on a high. I mean, yeah, maybe he's just going to do one more set of majors and then that'll be that. But yeah, I think the Tiger era is over. Yeah, we must stick to the party line. He said he had influenza. Influenza was the reason he pulled out.
Maybe he gave it to Cantlay.
There was a lot of illness around last week. Who knows? He had influenza and he still thinks he can be a factor at the highest level, but I'm not so sure. Tiger was disappointing week. Scottie Scheffler, we must mention it, finished last of the putt in the putting stats. Mm. He was 44th when we were on him the week before, and he was 44th in the putting stats. But he still finished in the top 10.
There was a moment, Steve, wasn't there? Was it a couple of months ago where he changed equipment? He changed his putter. And for a brief period, it looked like he got something to click, and now it's just back to where it was. Is that right?
Yeah, there was hope, wasn't there? When he won the Hero World Challenge, he just linked up with a new putting coach, a few little tinkers with equipment, and it looked very promising, but it just hasn't kicked on from there. It's worsened since then. And to finish last of the 51 players made the cut. He was the worst putter of all the players that made the cut. He still finished in the top 10. It's absolutely amazing. It seems like he can take 10,000 putts every week. Doesn't matter. He'll still finish in the top 10. So Scottie Scheffler, fascinating. And then the two more players I'd like to discuss, if I may. Will Zalatoris, who I think deserves a huge pat on the back. Are you prepared to pat him on the back?
Yeah, I'll give him a pat on the back.
Don't injure him, because that is the back that got him out for about several months. But to get a runner-up finish in a top-class event like that so soon after huge injury layoff, I think that was a great achievement. Because if you remember the Hero World Challenge we were just talking about, you had Scheffler's improved putting, but you also had Zalatoris last. You know, ugly golf. Zalatoris fans must have been worried when they saw their man doing that in the Bahamas. But here he is, you know, and loving that long putter he switched to.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for Zalatoris, excited for Matsuyama, worried about Scheffler, but just in awe that he manages to keep finishing the top 10 despite missing every putt he looks at. Tiger Woods, I think, has gone. Breaks my heart to say it, but yeah, he's got a lovely new apparel line, isn't he?
Is it lovely? I've seen some of the stuff. I just sort of looked at it. It looks like some sort of knockoff brand you'd get in Sports Direct or something.
yeah, I must admit I wasn't too taken on it.
Even Sunday red, is it? It's Sunday red. Apparently, yeah. It's some like trademark issue.
Yeah. I thought the outfit he had on round two was particularly bad. you know, lots of stripes and that. But yeah, maybe yeah, Tigers have stripes.
Was that the one that he was throwing it back to when he made his debut at Riviera?
Yeah,
that
they the did. They
oh,
did.
I quite like that. A bit of nostalgia, Steve.
You like? Yeah, you like some stripes, do you? You like some stripes? But yeah, yeah, that didn't bother me. But yeah, can I just get one more thing off my chest? You know, I'm a pretty angry man today. I just think we need to have another go at the rules of golf, don't we?
Okay.
Because Jordan Spieth. Yeah, Jordan Spieth was disqualified. I mean, it did. Yeah, Jordan Spieth was disqualified for signing for an incorrect scorecard. And I just think, yeah, we've got to just modernise, haven't we? Don't you think, Jack? I mean,
what's your solution?
I just think everybody knows what score he's on. You know, you've got a million count. You've got a shot tracker following every flipping hole. Every group's got a million people following, isn't it? Cameras on all of them. And then when he comes off, apparently he had an upset stomach on the day they got disqualified.
Was everyone ill?
There was a lot of illness at bat. He was desperate to get to the lavatory, Jack. So he's in the scorers' eye. He's just had a bad finish. He's close to pooing his pants. Let's not put too fine a point on it here. Sorry to be so crude, but and then he's rushed through it all, done his admin that they expect him all to do, even though everyone knows what score everyone's got and they could just do it all for him. Does his admin, runs off to the toilet, and he's disqualified for a multi-million dollar event. I think we've got him. You don't expect cricketers. Yeah, I was trying to think about comparisons with other sports. Like the cricketers out there, say sort of Brian Lara's just made 375, where he's trying to, and he comes off, and they go, you can just sign for it. How many fours did you get?
That's true, actually.
I just think, I didn't back Spieth. Anyone who backed Spieth, I feel particularly gutted for him. He's a long way back, but he could have done an Hideki Matsuyama. He could have come.
Have you ever signed for an incorrect score in the Dorset Open or something?
I haven't actually played in. Whenever I play in a tournament that involves scoring, it's normally like a team event, and I leave it to someone else to sort out. I just like to focus on my own game, which is what I'm suggesting the players should be allowed to do. You know, let someone else do the scoring.
Up their caddy, Steve. They pay their caddies enough. I mean, surely they can. I'm with you on most things. I'm struggling to sympathise with this one. Okay. I must admit, you've got to get 18 numbers correct. If Spieth needed the toilet that much, go to the toilet first and then sign the scorecard.
Yeah, I don't know whether he's allowed to do that. I don't know what I've heard Michael Kim tweeted about it, and he said that some players turn up having put nothing on their scorecard the whole round, and then they do them all on. They write them all in from memory or whatever. But yeah, this is the biggest tour in the world. Mega bucks. Why can't you just have one person score in every group? Why do you have to leave it to the players?
They hold up the boards and such.
Yeah, and you got shot tracker.
Yeah.
I think at this level, the amount of money in the game, you shouldn't have one of the stars of the tournament disqualified for an admin error. I think it's time to modernise. But yeah, I got a lot to get off my chest. But if Patrick Carney had won, nothing would have been bothering me.
we'll score for Jordan Spieth for 10% of winnings, and we'll call it a deal there, so he's never disqualified again. Right, that was the Genesis Invitational won by Hideki Matsuyama. Two tournaments to preview this week. The DP World Tour is back. We've got the Kenya Open, and we've got the Mexico Open on the USPGA. We shall start in Kenya. Steve Palmer, where are we playing?
Matega Golf Club, Nairobi, Kenya. 7,228 yards, par 71, four par fives. The Kenya Open used to be a challenge tour event. It was at Matega in 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2017 and 2018. And we've had two Kenya Opens on the DP World Tour, 2022 and last year. Tight, tree-lined, accurate driving, absolutely essential. The honours board reflects that. We've got loads of win this week as well. It's going to be really fiddly test this. 156 players going to post.
I don't know why, but this is always one of my favourite events of the year. I love flicking the telly on and seeing that the Kenya Open is being broadcast in the morning. It makes these February days feel a little bit lighter.
I've been to Kenya. I didn't get out of the airport, though. I was on my way. I was on my way to a wedding in Malawi, as you do. And
friends, haven't you?
I was best man at a wedding in Malawi. I must have discussed this before. And then I was at Kenya Airport for what seemed like, about days. it looked like a lovely country on the other side of the airport, but I just didn't want to get out there too much. But yeah, it's a magical event. This is actually called the Magical Kenya Open.
Really excited for it. Let's go through the top of the market. Thriston Lawrence is your market lead, around about 14-1, one at the time of recording. Ewan Ferguson, 16s. Rikuyu Hoshino, 18s. Alex Fitzpatrick, 25-1. Romain Langasque, haven't seen that name for a little while, 25-1. Frederick Lacroix, 25-1. Bigger the rest. Steve, I think it's fair to say, not the most star-studded of lineups for the DP World Tour event this week, but that doesn't matter when it comes to a betting perspective. How many selections for the Magical Kenya Open?
That is firm but fair, and we have five selections. It was very hard to get the list down here. We got five. It's a tough event.
Okay, five selections. Who's the main headline pick?
It's Ewan Ferguson at 16-1, who is made for the challenge of a Windy Matega. He's extremely accurate. He's a consistently straight hitter, beautiful golf swing, a Scot who's ultra comfortable in breezy conditions. He won the Boys Amateur Championship at Royal Liverpool, an open venue, in 2013. He threatened to win the Kenya Open on his Matega debut in 2022. He was four shots clear. You might remember this one. Four shots clear with a round to go, but he was inexperienced. He carded a Sunday 76. He ended up in eighth place, but he promised, he pledged that he would learn from that setback, do better next time. And he lived up to those words. Yeah, just 3 weeks later, he won the Qatar Masters. It was brilliant the way he recovered mentally from that 76. And then 3 weeks later, strong wins at Doha Golf Club, better event. And he won that, and a really gutsy finish. And then after that, a few months after that, he won a second DP World Tour title in the ISPS Handa World Invitation.
It's a mouthful, that one.
God, I had so much momentum there, as Bruce used to like saying. I've lost it all now. But the point needs making that he's had four top fives since that second victory. All right, he's been knocking at the door of the hat trick. Two of them have come in South Africa. He likes playing in Africa. And he finds it easier to get to the tournaments in this part of the world now because he now lives in Dubai. So a shorter journey, much shorter journey to Africa from Dubai than it is from his old place in Glasgow. He finished ninth in the Qatar Masters last time out. He's in good form. He's the most likely winner of the golf tournament. I'm all over our friend Ewan Ferguson.
Yeah, it does seem a mainstay on the top of the leaderboards now, doesn't he, on the DP World Tour. It'd be nice to see him win a couple more and really solidify his place at the top of this tour.
I think he's got huge ability. I really like Ewan Ferguson. We were on him for the French Open, of course, and it looked like he was going to win the French Open, another test of accuracy. And there was a couple of heartbreaking moments in that where there was one moment where he putted off the green into the water. Yeah, these are things that are sent to try us. But yeah, that was a much, French Open, a better event. Yeah, I think Ewan Ferguson has got loads of trophies in him. And in this grade, in this, as you mentioned, it's a weak field this week. I think he's a class act in a weak field.
We've had that a couple of times this year, thinking about it. We had Ferguson putting into the water and we had Scotty Scheffler putting into the bunker, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, we did actually. Yeah, in round three of Phoenix, he did well to scramble a bogey from that. Yeah, we don't have much luck, do we, Jack?
Strange old season so far. Ewan Ferguson, 16-1, top pick in the Magical Kenya Open. Four more to go. Who's next?
It's Ewan Ferguson's best friend, Connor Syme. Connor Syme is 35-1. I'm right behind the Scots this week. You know, as soon as I've processed this Patrick Cantlay disappointing, I haven't quite processed the Patrick Cantlay disappointment, but as soon as I have, I'm going to start singing Flower of Scotland. I'm going to continue singing Flower of Scotland until Sunday afternoon when one of these two Scots is going to win the Kenya Open. You know, I think we're going to get a Scottish 1-2 this week. You know, the fact that they're both there is great. You know, you're off to a far-flung location. These two guys can keep each other company, perhaps share a couple of whiskies of an evening. You know, I think it's good for both morale-wise. And Syme is equally well-suited to this test of accuracy. Really accurate driver is Syme. Neat and tidy. Won the Australian Amateur in 2016. Loads of great amateur form in windy locations. He played in the 2017 Walker Cup. He took Scotty Scheffler to the 18th green in a singles match. You know, it shows what good amateur Syme was. I think he got up to world number eight amateur, I believe. So he's not quite a former world number one amateur. But yeah, he was a great amateur golfer. Then he won on the Challenge Tour in 2019. He's threatened to win a few times on the DP World Tour. Seven times he's finished in the top three. And he was third in the 2021 Kenya Open. That was at Karen Country Club. We love Karen Country Club. Yeah. So he liked Karen Country Club. He's got a solid record in Africa generally. His Matega form figures are 26.55. I'm expecting a big improvement this week because he's coming into this tournament in really solid form. He's not doing much wrong. I think this is an ideal assignment. So, yeah, come on, Scotland. Come on, the United Kingdom.
Well, I would say, Steve, if you are going into this weekend singing Scottish songs, maybe avoid it at about 4:45 on Saturday, because I've just seen Scotland, England. On Saturday.
Well, I'm bringing us all together. I'm concentrating on the United Kingdom. I hope that matches a draw on Saturday.
Two Scots. I'm trying to look down the list to see who else we've got. Who am I expecting up next?
You are expecting the potential party pooper to this United Kingdom party. You know, I want to bring us all together this weekend, but there is a potential party pooper in the shape of Jesper Svensson. Who is 28-1. You know, as we unfurl our union flags on Sunday, maybe Jesper Svensson might ruin it because, you know, he looks a DP World Tour champion in waiting, doesn't he, Joe? Let's be perfectly honest. He's really impressed me this season. He's a 27-year-old Swede. He won on the Challenge Tour last May. Then he had three runner-up finishes on the Challenge Tour before his graduation. Then he finished second in the South African Open in early December. You know, a barnstorming start to life on the DP World Tour. Back in Africa this week, of course, confidence sky high. He was ill. There's a lot of illness around on both tours. He was ill at the Bahrain Championship, but he finished runner-up. You know, he showed bundles of courage at times during that tournament, held some clutch putts, unlucky runner-up. Then he followed up with 16th place in the Qatar Masters. He's not missed a cut this year. Svensson carded four rounds of par or better to finish 26th on his only previous Kenya Open. That was at Matega 2022. He was world number 389 at the time. Yeah, I can't get Svensson out of the frame this week. So, yeah.
Jesper Svensson, 28-1. Very good. Three down. Two more to go. Where are we going next?
We're going to Darius van Driel at 60-1, who we like backing when there is a premium on driving accuracy. Such a precise golfer. Matega is a dreamy venue for him. He was 12th in the 2017 Kenya Open at Matega. He missed a cut by a shot when in terrible form in 2022, then finished 11th in last year's Kenya Open at Matega. He closed with a 63. That was the joint best round of the week. He's also done well at Karen. He was eighth in the 2016 Kenya Open. 10th in the 2021 Kenya Savannah Classic. You might have missed that one. That was a one-off DP World Tour event.
Was that the one where we were on Sam Horsfield and hit a shank down 17?
Oh, blimey. It might well have been. Yeah. I think we did back Sam Horsfield.
I've completely derailed your thought process. Just go back to Tiger Shank. So as we're talking about shanks, I love the way he made it sound classy. He said he got it wrong. His back spasmed and he delivered the hosel first. And I thought that's the only way you can make a shank sound slightly technical.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he delivered the hosel first. Yeah, I don't know whether his glutes weren't activated there. Were they? I don't know what was going wrong, but I just found that heartbreaking. But yeah, Darius van Driel won't be shanking anything.
I've got off Darius van Driel there, haven't I?
So Darius van Driel is absolutely proven at Matega. He's proven at Karen. He's proven in Africa generally. Yeah, just before Christmas, he finished ninth in the Joburg Open and fourth in the Alfred Dunhill Championship in South Africa. And that came on the back of him reviving his career with fourth place in the DP World Tour qualifying score. So everything's going well for Darius van Driel, and he's turning up at probably the most suitable track for him on the whole schedule.
Is kind of playing in Kenya in particular, Steve, a real kind of specialist track? Because whenever I'm watching these events, you know, we always talk about the differing grass types, which I never really believed in until I started playing on some different ones. But it looks so different in Kenya.
Well, even without any wind, these such tight targets off the tee. You know, really tall trees, daunting narrow fairways. So even with no wind, you and I would just be spraying it into the trees.
For yourself.
But we're going to get winds every day this week. You've got to be a straight driver to succeed. I'd be staggered if some swashbuckling type wins this week.
I did just see, as you mentioned that, the first name on my list, as I've got it down here, is Wilco Nienaber, but I'm assuming he's not going to go too well this week.
Blimey, yeah. I mean, he should be taking sort of five iron off every tee, really. Do you?
One more to go in the Kenya Open, Steve. Who is it?
It's Santiago Tarrio, who is 75 to 1, another supremely accurate driver, another two-time Challenge Tour champion. Did I mention Darius Vanjula has won twice on the Challenge Tour? Santiago Tarrio has won twice on the Challenge Tour. And I think he might threaten a DP World Tour breakthrough this week. You know, he's third in the Kenya Open last year. He had weekend rounds of 64 and 66. Only the eventual champion, his compatriot, Jorge Campillo, outscored him over those final 36 holes. Finding fairway is going to be so difficult with the win this week. Tarrio's up to the task. He was in dire form when he came to his Kenya Open debut in 2022, but he finished 26th. He carded four under par rounds. He's never carded an over par round at Matega. I nearly chopped the microphone off there in my passion for that statistic. He finished 11th in the Mauritius Open in his last trip to Africa. So, yeah, this is a 33-year-old Spaniard, bit of a character. Very quirky putting stroke, but I'm not bothered about this week, the quirky putter stroke this week, because I think finding fairways is the absolute key to success.
You said it was difficult to get that long list down to a short list.
Yeah.
I never like asking this question because you've obviously crossed names off that you were close to going with. Were there any you were close to putting up today?
Yeah, John Catlin was the last off the list. I would be crushed if John Catlin wins because this is a course that is good for him.
I had his name for a while. Was he?
No, he had a little form slump, gone back to the Asian Tour, and he finished third last week. But he just had a long flight on Sunday from that event to here. It was hard to find negatives about John Catlin. So if you're having six, but I just didn't want to have six. I didn't want to put too much pressure on the punters. I'm happy with my lot.
Okay, we'll recap all of Steve's selections at the end of the show. But first, we need to look at the Mexico Open. Steve, excited for this one? Talk us through where we're playing.
Vedanta Velata, the magical Mexico Open. 7,456 yards, par 71, four par fives, a Greg Norman design, is hosted since 2022, is flat, wide open paspalum grass fairways, large greens, sunny and calm weather throughout, powerhouse's paradise. The most successful players in this tournament over the last 2 years have also dominated the driving distance statistics. We've got a field of 144 going to post.
Sounds a delight. Let's take a look through the top of the market. Defending champion Tony Finau, your favourite, around about 15 to 2. Nikolai Højgaard, 16s. Stefan Jaeger, 22 to 1, alongside Emiliano Grillo. Thomas Detry, whatever you want to call him, 25 to 1. Taylor Pendrith, same price. Bigger the rest. Steve, how many picks for the Mexico Open?
For
there we go. You're over Cantlay now. That's what you needed to get out of your system.
Yeah, pure aggression. That's how it works, isn't it? Yeah, we got four.
Four picks for the Mexico Open. Who is the headline selection?
Nikolai Højgaard. 16 to 1 now. Who is made for this Vedanta Velata assignment? We want power-packed, aggressive players on our side this week. Nikolai Højgaard fits into that category and is well on his way to becoming one of the best players in the world. He's a 22-year-old with three DP World Tour victories under his belt. The latest of them was in a high-class DP World Tour Championship in November last year. He started this year as well in Dubai, played nicely, but his first PGA Tour start of 2024 was incredible. A Torrey Pines debut. He had no right to contend for the Farmers Insurance Open, Jack. No right. But Nikolai does not play by the rules. He finished runner-up at Torrey Pines. What further evidence do we need that this Danish dude is ready to eat from golf's top table? He has since finished 31st at Pebble Beach, 39th at Riviera, two elevated, designated signature events. He closed with a 69 on Sunday. Only 11 players in the field outscored him at Riviera on Sunday. This lad is turning up in high-class company, making course debuts and doing well. Now he turns up in a rubbish event, let's be perfectly honest, with course experience, Jack. And he looks the man to beat to me. He played in last year's Mexico Open, finished 33rd, peppering pins, had a bad week of short game. He was world number 122 at the time, had hardly any stateside experience. He was runner-up, we must also mention, he was runner-up in the Corrales Punta Cana Championship last year on paspalum grass. Back on that surface this week. Yeah, I think we've got a PGA Tour breakthrough coming on Sunday for Nikolai Højgaard.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Doesn't look like a great field. So when you see a player, you know, to the quality of Højgaard, you just expect that he's going to go off a shorter price. 16-1 feels very generous from the bookmakers.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I'm happy with that. Very similar price, of course, to Ewan Ferguson in Kenya. I think that's a beautiful each way double.
Okay, I'm excited for that. Nikolai Højgaard, the main pick for the Mexico Open. Three more to go. Who's next?
Next best is Erik van Rooyen, 35-1, who triumphed on his last visit to Mexico, of course, on the Paspalum fairways of El Camaleon in the Worldwide Technology Championship in November. That was his second PGA Tour title. There'd been a lovely career progression for van Rooyen. He won on the Sunshine Tour, he won on the Challenge Tour, then he won on the DP World Tour. Now he's established PGA Tour champion. He turns 34 years of age tomorrow, so he'll start the week with a birthday cake. I think he'll end the week with a trophy. He finished 33rd on his Mexico Open debut last year. He missed two cuts coming into the tournament. He missed seven cuts immediately after the tournament. So he's in a terrible run form, but finished 33rd in, you know, still banked a decent check at Vedanta Vellata. This time in much better nick. Missed a cut by a shot in the Phoenix Open last time out. Don't worry about that.
Erik van Rooyen, second pick for Steve in the Mexico Open. Who's next?
Davis Thompson's also 35-1. You're probably starting to panic, Jack, that we would be going into battle without a former world number one amateur.
Here we go.
You can calm down now. We've got one in the side. It's Davis Thompson. He's got the world. He's only 24. He was a brilliant amateur golfer. He's a 24-year-old now with the world at his feet. He won on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2022. He finished runner-up in the American Express on the PGA Tour last season. He's been in rock-solid form for 7 months, I'd say. He's played only once before in Mexico, and he finished 15th at El Camaleon. You know, this week's layout suits him much better than El Camaleon. I think Davis Thompson, you know, given what you saw in Phoenix, four under par rounds in the Phoenix Open for 15th place, is coming. It's coming for Davis Thompson.
Yeah, I'm really liking the look of this list so far, Steve. I understand that we've rattled through them. One more pick for the Mexico Open. Who is it?
It's Cameron Champ, 50-1. Champ. 50-1, the champ, who's playing much better than the bare form suggests. He started the year missing the cut in the Sony Open by a shot at a course which doesn't suit him at all. He missed the cut in the Amex, but he closed with a 65. Only 13 players in the Amex field outscored him that day. Then he missed the cut by a shot in the Farmers Insurance Open, despite a second round 67. Then he missed the cut on the mark again in Phoenix. You know, narrow failures for Cameron Champ. All right, so four missed cuts. But yeah, I just want to look beyond that. And I think when he gets to one of his favourite golf courses in the world this week, he'll forget about those narrow failures. Cameron Champ has finished 6th and 8th in the Mexico Opens at Vallarta. He had missed his previous six PGA Tour cuts when he teed up in this event last year. Yeah, and yet he finished 8th. He carded four rounds in the 60s. So he can forget about all those missed cuts, and he can be a huge contender here. We're talking about a three-time PGA Tour champion. Mm. Cameron Champ's a really, really interesting and attractive wager.
Yeah, one of those players, very different to Hideki Matsuyama, but once they get in full flow, incredibly exciting to watch.
One of the most spectacular drivers of a ball in the world, and this course is made for powerful drivers.
Now, the listeners and the viewers at home, Steve, I'm sure will hear, okay, course suited to Powerhouse has won this event before. They're screaming at you, where's Tony Finau? Why have you not selected him?
I understand your screams, but his putting stroke is unconvincing at the moment. You know, he's up there with Scottie Scheffler, really. You know, he obviously likes this course. It's not just the win. He was second. You know, him and John Rahm have had this tournament between them the last 2 years. Tony Finau is not Scottie Scheffler.
Good observation.
We're full of great advice on this podcast. And, you know, there we've got an absolute diamond. But you know what I mean? They're both obviously putting badly, but Scottie Scheffler's ball striking much more consistent. I don't think we can be backing Finau at 7-1. You know, I've got no urge to play the short prices about Finau. Much prefer my guys.
Do you approach these PGA Tour events with slight trauma nowadays, Steve, after the start we've had to the season? I mean, your picks have been brilliant, but, you know, big price winners left, right and centre.
Well, I do dip into the Twitter sphere to sort of look at golfers, and I do stumble across a lot of exasperated punters, you know, but there are a lot of Americans, a lot of our American friends getting really disgruntled. A lot of them have been new to betting, of course, weren't they? Because the laws have only recently changed, and they're all betting on the PGA Tour with sort of novice enthusiasm, and then seeing all these sort of 200 to one shots, 300 to one shots, right? And a lot of them I can see holding their hands up in despair, saying, "Yeah, this is impossible." I would urge patience. The key to successful golf punting is patience. At some point this season, that Lady Luck will relent. And
do you take slight sort of sadistic joy from that, watching those who are new to the game struggle with it, as someone that's been hanging around in the scene for decades, just finding winners here and there? I mean, your staying power, Steve, in the golf betting scene is like no other.
Yeah, I don't take any pleasure from suffering people. I'm not that horrible, but I want us all to do well. I mean, I like seeing suffering bookmakers. I enjoy seeing bookmakers suffer, but punters, we're all comrades together, and I want us all to win, and I'm sure we all will win at some point soon. We'll win this week. We'll win this week, Jack. I would urge our American friends to stick with it.
Absolutely. I've been thoroughly enjoying hearing your weekend plans recently, Steve. There was a great column from yourself in the Racing Post last week. I mean, Sweet Spot viewers had already heard about your trip to the point to point. Have we got anything exciting like that going on this weekend?
I don't know. I think I'm going to try and get it back, running again, Jack. I got injured, and I've been out for 2 months injured, and I was 6 weeks into the 9-week Couch to 5K program, which you probably know all about. So now I guess I've got to go back to, I was going to ask your advice on this. It might be quite boring to ask it on
straight. I wouldn't go back to the very start. Maybe what were you on, week six?
I was on week six of nine, but I've grown a great big beer belly in the 2 months I've been off. It's going to be so hard to get going again. I was thinking just go straight back to the start.
Yeah, you could do. I mean, I guess the risk of starting midway through is you might injure yourself again. What was wrong with you?
I had a sort of, we couldn't really identify what it was. It was the connection between the groin and the thigh, some sort of muscle in there, and sprang. If that's even a word. But I feel like I need to get back out there.
Well, that sounds very wholesome.
That'll be my plan, yeah. Yeah, I need a wholesome weekend, because me and Tommy Tiger were alone last weekend, and we had a lot of Chinese takeaways, and we had a lot of visits to the public house, and we had a lot of fish and chips, and we had a lot of wear and tear from last weekend.
Sounds like a brilliant weekend, Steve.
And we watched the Terrors, and the Terrors got stuffed 4-1. That was pretty heartbreaking, but they're playing again tonight. So, I don't know, mate. I don't know. I'm going to try and get running, because I know you're a runner and you always look a picture.
Well, I'm not running at the moment. I've got bloody tendonitis, haven't I?
Tendonitis.
I did that silly running challenge in January and screwed it all up.
Yeah, this is the thing, isn't it? You can have great intentions. Yeah, I thought I'd cracked life, because when I was running, I seemed to be tipping loads of winners. And maybe if I can get running again, I'll start to win. But then you get an injury and it just,
Well, go out running on Saturday, singing the Scottish National Anthem. And
Flower of Scotland. Is that this? That's not their national anthem, is it? That's just their sort of rugby song.
No, but you can sing both, can't you?
Maybe it is their national anthem. Get commenting. Oh, Flower of Scotland. When will we see your like again? Oh, Flower of Scotland. Please win the Kenyan.
If anyone sees a man running around Weymouth this weekend, please don't report him to any authorities. He has good intentions.
That's good lyrics, then. Yeah, please win the Kenyan. It's almost worse.
Steve, we best recap our selections for this week so people could jot them down. We shall start in the magical Kenya Open.
Ewan Ferguson, Conor Syme, come on, Scotland. Jesper Svensson, Darius Van Driel, Santiago Tarrio.
And in the Mexico Open.
The magical Mexico Open. Why can't Mexico be magical too? Nicolai Hogar. Eric Van Rowan, Davis Thompson, and Cameron Champ.
Excellent. There's your selections for this week's tournament. So a reminder to follow along with all of the action on the Racing Post Sport website for Steve's in-running selections as well. Two tournaments again next week, Steve?
Three, I believe.
Oh, three is there? Oh,
yeah,
blimey.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah. I remember. Is it the last week of the month next week? Yeah. The last week of February, I definitely had three. So triple header time.
Well, our rest and recovery is very much over. Steve, thank you very much. If you're following in with Steve, please remember to do so responsibly. And we'll see you again next Tuesday for another episode of The Sweet Spot.